The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Going back to when I started Arch Collective, and even in the name of itself, the Arch actually is representative of each of the members of my family's name.
That's good.
And my husband, his last name is Abraham, so that's really the A, not Amanda.
Okay.
He's an engineer, and I was talking like, what's something that's really important structurally? Like, give me something that's solid and that, like, you know, will stand the test of time. And so we were talking about an arch, and then it sort of worked with our family. So there's a dual meaning there.
Good.
But also, I think it's a nice representation of the connection between when I work with clients, which is from Series A to Series B. That's typically the arc of when I work with them. But then collective, you know, from the beginning, I knew that I wanted this company. I didn't want to just be a one-off consultant. I wanted to be something bigger than that. There's usually a threshold for how big you can grow if you're a one-off business. But also, I mentioned that I have two children, and I've met a lot of women that they step out of the workforce and they want to get back in, but the way that the workforce is structured isn't necessarily supportive of where they are and their adjusted goals.
Right.
And so I'm like, wouldn't it be great if I could find a way to tap into that network that I have access to, friends of mine who previously worked or former colleagues, and, you know, not just only women, like any freelance marketer, but I'm like, there's certainly an opportunity to tap into that. And so hence the idea of the collective, where I play the role of the fractional CMO and develop the strategy for my clients. And that's the first thing I do for them. And then once we have that marketing plan, the strategy, the roadmap, whatever you want to call it, then I say, okay, in order to execute on this, you have one or zero or, you know, a handful of marketers on your team. I can use them in these ways, but let's supplement for some of these projects with my team. And, you know, you don't have to hire them full time. I bring them in when I need them, and, you know, they exit when you don't. So it's a very efficient use of capital, which is so important for a startup company.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com, or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, this is Amanda Rapido, founder of Arch Collective. At Arch Collective, we handle all marketing strategy and execution for post-Series A funded B2B tech startups, so they can go from achieving product market fit to acquiring more clients, securing Series B funding, or even possibly an acquisition. by using our unique marketing model, which is a dynamic fractional CMO for strategy, plus the collective, an accomplished network of marketers and creatives for execution. This happens all for the price of a full-time CMO. Excited to be here.
All right, Amanda, good morning. Is it, well, it's even earlier where you are, right? Well, you're an hour behind me in Michigan.
No, we're on Eastern time zone.
So oh, you are o'clock. Eastern time zone. Okay, yeah, you're right. My son's in Indiana and he's just, I remember we were driving through past Purdue and then the time changed by an hour. So yeah, so you guys are Eastern. Okay, good. So it's 10 o'clock there too, because you're not in San Francisco. You are in Michigan today, right?
Yes. For a few months to enjoy the good summer weather of the Midwest.
Good. All right, good. And your headset's working good. We're going to talk about some cool stuff today. So was it your publicist or something connected us? Yeah. Something like that, right?
Yeah. I work with a group called the Expert Bookers, and they're the ones who introduced the two of us to get me on the podcast.
Very good. Okay. So I think what I'd like you to do for the growing listenership, hopefully, is talk about your background, like, you know, where you're from, because I know you said you're from Michigan, what your background training is, evident in your bio, but nobody has that. And then we can get into what Arch Collective is and its unique model, because I think for startups, founders, entrepreneurs, it's a very unique, you know, model that you've put together that a lot of people in the marketing world are not doing. So, but once you take it away, let's go back to the log cabin you grew up in.
Sounds perfect. Well, I here in Michigan, I did grow up in a family of entrepreneurs. So starting something new and working with entrepreneurs is in my DNA, as one would say. However, my career journey also started somewhat entrepreneurially, as my first job was working at a startup company. I worked for an orthodontic startup in Texas.
Like a device company?
Well, they offered a solution called SureSmile, which shortens the time you wear braces.
Okay.
And in fact, they were acquired a couple of years ago by Dentsply, which I got to experience my first exit as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to experience early, I think, in your career, right?
It is. And the other thing that working for a startup, you know, got me used to was being extremely flexible and nimble and wearing lots of hats. And I never had the luxury of working for a big brand that everyone knew. I started off in sales. And so when I walked in the door, I had to get them to understand the problem and get them to understand why our technology was something even worth looking, not with the benefit of people knowing the brand. And I always joke that for most of my career, my family had no idea where I was working or what I was doing, because they weren't household names, but I liked it. And, you know, it was the start of me even beginning my career and beginning Arch Collective, where I work exclusively with startup companies.
Yeah. You kind of got bit by the bug early.
I did.
Definitely. Well, I think the startup world is kind of mysterious to a lot of people. You know, they think of it as this, like, you know, tech startup exit for billions of dollars type of thing. And I think getting into that world early probably helped you with understanding it, being comfortable with it, working with these people, right?
That's so true. And there's our own language within the world of startups. And I think a lot of times what people see are the sexy sides of the story, or even the like dramatic fall downs, like a WeWork or something, or, you know, you hear of an Uber, or, you know, all of these dramatic stories. But, you know, really with startups, there's, you know, thousands of startup companies that are invested in every year, and only a very small fraction of them get to that kind of level. You know, certainly a small fraction that becomes a unicorn, as they say,
but
even smaller that becomes acquired or makes it in the market and continues to get funding or goes public.
Right. And that doesn't mean there aren't successful startups, but it just, you know, you don't exit for Google money. You know, you don't sell YouTube to Google for $17 billion or whatever they sold it for, but that doesn't mean you don't do well and then maybe go on to another venture, right? I mean, it's a big industry.
Yeah. And I specifically focus on B2B companies, which are even more hidden in the background.
Right. Because you don't, as the average consumer, even hear about them. Right. Yeah.
Right. So, and to your point, there are massive acquisitions and a ton of deals that take place on the B2B side that never really hits the you know, average consumer's
radar. Right. It hits
the
trades and stuff, not outside of the business world.
Exactly.
Maybe not even outside of the industry in which, you know, they're merging. So if it's what's the phone company? I'm with T-Mobile. If T-Mobile merges with Sprint, obviously everybody's going to know it, right? Because they deal with consumers. They also deal B2B, but if they're unknown in that industry or they're a business that supports some other consumer organization, you never hear about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
You nailed it.
Yeah. So I was looking at your bio. So you've spent a lot of time in corporate. I mean, you've worked for a lot of companies, right? Getting a lot of experience on the street.
Yeah, I started small and worked my way to bigger and bigger companies, and which isn't typically how it goes. And you know, it was my last role at a large publicly traded company. You know, I think at this point they're valued at around $7 billion. So it was a big company, and it wasn't resonating with my DNA in that entrepreneurial spirit. You know, things move a lot slower. You have a very niche role in those types of organizations. And I worked with great people and learned a ton, but it wasn't.
But your impact
for me.
Is like, you know, incremental. It's not being, I understand. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. And so, you know, being the person that I am, I'm like, I'm going to go back to my roots, and I'm in the, you know, Silicon Valley area. I live in San Francisco most of the time. And so I started interviewing for CMO roles at B2B tech startup companies,
like
mostly
smaller
in,
companies.
Yeah. You know, usually at that point they have call it $1 to $3 million in revenue. They have a handful of clients, which in
they're funded. They've been like maybe through one round or.
Yeah, so Series A funding is usually your first big round of funding.
Right.
And
yeah, past friends and family and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Maybe an angel in between, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the fact that you have revenue is a demonstration of product market fit, meaning like, hey, you're offering something and people actually want to pay for it and consistently pay for it.
Right.
And so while I was interviewing with four different companies at one time. I was like, they all seem to have the same problem and they all want to pay me about the same amount, which would have been a pay cut. And so I started doing a bit more research and I'm like, this is something that's quite prolific in this space. And I kind of joked to my spouse, I said to him, I'm like, why don't I just work for all four of them? I'm like, if I did that, I could so efficiently solve their problems. And
yeah,
you'd
make more money. It'd be less expensive for each of them.
Exactly.
Right.
But that's exactly what I set out to do. And that's what I've done with Arch Collective.
So this was what year? This was a couple of years back?
2019.
Oh, perfect timing. So you go to your husband, you're like, I'm quitting my job. We got two kids. Did you have two kids at that point?
My youngest was about six, not even 6 months old.
Oh, perfect. I remember those days. That's a great time to like start your own business. I mean, why? You're not sleeping anyway. You might as well, right? Just start
your own
business.
Throw another log on the fire, as they say.
Right, exactly. Not knowing that 6 months later or whatever it was, I don't know what point of 2019, you would be in the middle of a pandemic.
Right.
You didn't even know that was
coming. Two young kids, a mortgage in San Francisco, and then a pending pandemic coming.
Right.
Or, you know, let's do it.
Right, which you and I were talking off the mic is one of the top two or three most expensive places to live in the country.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure.
Well, and
that all makes sense to me.
And I think it's something that I feel really fortunate that I do have a partner, which was like, go for it. Like, if this
That's
is what's going to make you happy, you know, just dive in. And the good thing is I dove in and I feel fortunate is, you know, that it's taken off. And, you know, anytime there's a gap in the market and, you know, one offers something to fill it, usually it's a pretty good chance of it working out. You know, funny story though, is about, I got a couple clients, you know, one in January and then right at the beginning of March. And then obviously everything shut down. I think it was March 13th or 17th, right around that time. And so I had to resell both of them and re-engage
them.
Right.
Why do you, keep me and so forth.
Right.
Sure.
Right. And they both, you know, kept me on. And that was one of those pivotal entrepreneurial moments where I thought, if I can get two clients, I didn't really lose them, but was about to lose them and like resell them and re-engage them all within like the first few months of business, I'm going to be okay. So it
I
was
would think that the pandemic actually would be beneficial to you because people are looking to cut costs. They're not looking to bring on a full-time marketing officer. They, you know, their funding may be, so they're probably sharpening their pencil even more. So they're looking for someone like you who does have the expertise, but you say, listen, Amanda, we can't bring you on full-time. And you're like, well, I need a full-time job. But you solved that problem.
Yeah. Well, at that time, right when it hit, people weren't sure how long it was going to last.
Well, of course. So I thought it was going to be 3 weeks in my underwear on the couch.
Right.
That didn't really work out.
Or like do I need to tighten my belt, watch my expenses, not be investing in things like marketing and whatnot? But history has taught us that the companies in downturns that do invest in marketing are those that end up in a better place once things have become to settle. So I had a pretty good story and some great examples over recent, you know, times and how the importance of investing in marketing during these moments will help your business long term. So I was able to keep them on, but now, you know, that we're further into it and hopefully nearing the end or getting to the end of it, you know, there's certainly more clarity and, you know, what an opportunity for a lot of businesses and how much the marketplace has shifted and will, you know, continue to stay the new normal is, you know, an overused phrase, but it really has changed and it's changed the way we need to think about marketing too.
Yeah. And surprisingly so in the startup space, there's a lot of money on the street. I see deals being done. I see, you know, mid-cap investment companies raising money for all kinds of startups. And, you know, on that part of the business, it's been pretty healthy. I know it was quiet for a while going into the summer, but as people got a vision, I think, for what was going to happen, you know, eventually we would have a vaccine and eventually we would start to, and we're doing business differently now. I think it actually boosted all of this stuff. People have access to expertise now in marketplaces that they didn't have access to before because they couldn't use a technology or marketing person out of Oregon because they're in New Jersey. And now they can because everything's connected and we have Zoom and we have Teams and all this type of stuff. So I think, you know, I'm not happy that 550,000 people died, but there is a silver lining to, you know, the business marketplace. I think you're like at the right time, like perfect, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, I expected to do a lot more traveling, you know, being in this role.
Right. That's another thing for family and life.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting to see how it's played out where I'm able to build relationships and do everything virtually. And whenever I joined a conference call prior to November, I guess, March 2020, my camera wasn't necessarily on, you know, and now it's like, it's more likely that it's
nor would they have the technology necessarily to see you. So
yeah, usually they were grainy and or like stilted. So you're like, I'm not even going to bother. And, you know, thanks to Zoom and other technologies, it's, you know, and maybe not so thanks to them because we got to do everything face to face.
Now you got to put makeup on to get on the computer. Right. I always said that years ago. I said, oh my God, when we go to video phones, we're going to have to like get dressed to answer the telephone. I don't want to do that, but well, you kind of do it.
In a, you know, slightly related note there, I guess the Botox market has gone up tremendously. You know, people
I didn't even think about that. Because look, I think I need some treatments. Never noticed
well,
that
I'm not
going
to comment on that.
Well, I never noticed that before, but I'm looking at you, looking at myself. It makes you a little self-conscious.
Well, all day long, you see yourself reflected and you know, that certainly would make even the most confident person begin to question, wow, do I need a little touch up here and there? And thank goodness for filters and whatnot that do exist in the cameras. But
I got stuck in a filter the other day. I couldn't get a cat face off of my, I figured it out. So, but I'm sorry.
I wish I would have been on still.
Let's go back. So, you know, it's funny because I think that a lot of, you mentioned something before and I want to drive it home. A lot of small business owners, not just startups, they seem to invest in marketing at the wrong times, right? Because times are good and I'm not saying you shouldn't invest in marketing when times are good. Of course you should, but you also should plan budget-wise, right? Because if things turn and they're not within your control and you have no resources or budget to market and keep your name out there and so forth, that's when you get crushed. That's when it's most important. And it's kind of something you have to plan for.
Right. And I mean, startups and established businesses, or you know, whether they're public or profitable or however you want to describe a non-startup, is that they need to spend, right? They, because it's their survival. And so if they don't get more revenue, if they don't get more clients, if they don't get to that next step, then they likely won't receive the next round of funding, or they'll run out of money because they won't have the revenue coming in.
Yeah, it's an engine that they have to keep driving.
It's kind of a life or death thing, not to overdramatize it, but that's really what it is. And so marketing is critical. And I think sometimes it's, depending on who started the company, it's not necessarily understood. Like if you've got finance and the numbers behind it, it's real clear. In sales, you're like, you're either selling something and you're not.
Right.
In marketing, and a question I get from CEOs a lot is, how do I know if you're good? Like, how do I measure?
Yeah, right. Good marketing? ROI and investment, right? That's a good. Yep. So let's discuss that, because I think it's very important, even for mm-hmm. small business owners that are not startups. How do they do that? Marketing is elusive the right word? Is it? Because it's more of a long haul, right? Content marketing, like, does my podcast bring me business? Yes, people think of me all the time, but it's not like because I'm selling
that, though,
something.
Right?
Exactly.
Right. And that's where when you've got a finance-oriented brain, you know, mindset, it's like, we'll tie it back to that attribution
we talk about
in marketing, and it's something that's sort of this, like the dragon that we're always chasing. Like, how do we directly attribute where someone came from? And how that revenue is connected to a marketing campaign or otherwise. And, you know, I, rather than elusive, I describe it as, you know, a blend of art and science. And I think it really is. And I say, if it was all science, then every company would be successful.
Right. Of course, they would have the formula and they would do it.
Right. But there's certainly opportunities to measure and quantify and get into the science of it or the data of it. But then some of it is also understanding, and I call it client-centric marketing, like getting into the minds of your clients and really understanding what's driving them, what's keeping them up at night. Why do they love you? Why do they hate you? What's their experience? Like, where do they go for information? And understanding that and being able to synthesize that information with the data, that's where the magic of marketing happens.
Sure.
And so there's things you can do on the qualitative side. But you know, there's certainly the key things you can do on the quantitative side, but it's bringing it together and having the right marketers to bring that together and tell that story or synthesize the information, put together the strategy. That's where, you know, the
rubber meets the road.
From the shaft. Yes, yes, exactly.
Right. Okay, good. That's a good answer, because I think a lot of it is more of an art than a science, you know, because if not, we could all put Google AdWords out there and just keep making money, but it's always changing, right? If you're marketing somewhere and it's not where your clients are, then you are wasting your money.
And it's funny, I was listening to a group on Clubhouse this morning.
Clubhouse.
And they were talking about some of the pending changes for on Facebook and their platform and how some things are changing. And it was really great that the woman who was leading the group, she's like, look, I've been doing Facebook ads for, you know, 13 years or whatever. And she's like, I'm now like, the change doesn't bother me. You know, the algorithms at Google change, you know, the platforms change, but things are constantly evolving. So if you're in the, especially the digital marketing space, and you don't like change, then you probably need to move to a different part
of
marketing.
Right, because you can't just do one thing and continue doing that one thing expecting it to work. It's not going
Correct.
To.
Yeah. Which I think is exciting, right? If it was always the same, that would be boring to me. But, you know, it's obviously anytime you have to relearn a system, that can be frustrating. And I appreciate that.
Okay. We'll get to Clubhouse later. I'm an Android person, so I borrowed my daughter's iPad mini, but apparently it's too old to work. Clubhouse says your iPad mini is too old and I can't, and I'm not going to go out and like buy, I don't know. We can talk about that later, but yeah. So let's continue with the discussion, because I think that how people market and what they need to do is important. So tell me about Arch Collective and, you know, what you're like, how does the whole community work?
Mm-hmm. So I can talk about how it works with the collective side of it. And I can talk about then how we work with our the clients that I bring on too. So going back to when I started Arch Collective, and even in the name of itself, the Arch actually is representative of each of the members of my family's name.
That's good.
And my husband, his last name is Abraham, so that's really the A, not Amanda.
Okay.
He's an engineer, and I was talking like, what's something that's really important structurally? Like, give me something that's solid and that like, you know, we'll stand the test of time. And so we were talking about an arch, and then it sort of worked with our family. So there's a dual meaning there.
Good.
But also, I think it's a nice representation of the connection between when I work with clients, which is from Series A to Series B. That's typically the arc of when I work with work with them. But then collective, you know, from the beginning, I knew that I wanted this company. I didn't want to just be a one-off consultant. I wanted to be something bigger than that. You know, one, there's usually a threshold for how big you can grow if you're a one-off business. But also, you know, I mentioned that I have two children, and I've met a lot of women that they step out of the workforce and they want to get back in, but the way that the workforce is structured isn't necessarily supportive of where they are and their adjusted goals.
Right.
And so I'm like, wouldn't it be great if I could find a way to tap into that network that I have access to, friends of mine who previously worked or former colleagues, and, you know, not just only women, like any freelance marketer, but I'm like, there's certainly an opportunity to tap into that. And so hence the idea of the collective, where I play the role of the fractional CMO and develop the strategy for my clients. And that's the first thing I do for them. And then once we have that marketing plan, the strategy, the roadmap, whatever you want to call it, then I say, okay, in order to execute on this, you have one or zero or, you know, a handful of marketers on your team. I can use them in these ways, but let's supplement for some of these projects with my team. And, you know, you don't have to hire them full time. I bring them in when I need them, and, you know, they exit when you don't. So it's a very efficient use of capital, which is so important for a startup company.
So the collective is a community of professionals that basically provide their services on a fractional basis to multiple companies, just like you did.
Yeah. And
But not all marketing people. They're not necessarily.
They're marketers and creative. So I mean, I don't have like.
Not bringing financial CFOs, people in or whatever. Right.
But I mean, I do now, having worked in it, like have a network. So if someone needed a fractional CFO, I could certainly make a business attorney,
at least in New Jersey.
Yeah, I do.
We're the only profession that's landlocked to the state in which we're admitted, but whatever. Yeah.
So the group I work with, then I bring them in. And what I think is nice, and why I specifically say we handle all of marketing strategy and execution, is that my clients like that they basically can say, it's all on you. Like, I don't have to worry about who I need. Like, figuring out how to build a marketing team is, figuring out who to hire for one marketing role is stressful enough. The fact that someone is going to not only figure out who I need, get the right people, manage all the work, make sure
it gets done.
Yeah, the
bandwidth for them is incredible. They don't even want to. Yeah,
exactly. So it's like they kind of throw it. I mean, we're engaged, right? But like they throw it over the fence a bit. And then it's like, hey, they know Amanda will and her team will get it done. And I take pride in that. And it's something that I'm glad that I can offer to clients, where it's one less thing for a CEO to have to worry about.
So on the client side, is not always tapping into the collective. It just depends on the relationship.
Yeah, usually. I mean, I haven't had a client that hasn't used it in some form, but the extent of the usage, it really depends. In fact, I started with a new client recently, and they have quite a marketing team. So how the collective will be used is going to be very different for them, because most of my clients, they either have no marketing hires, or maybe they have like a very junior marketing hire. And so we probably need additional skill sets, but they don't want to bring on a full-time, you know, brand marketer. They need to bring on a full-time team to build a new website. It's like, let's bring them in, use them as a resource, and then set them free. But you get everything you need.
Are you working in any particular industries more so than others? I mean, is it, you know, healthcare, medical device, tech, fintech? I don't know.
So most of my clients are, well, they're tech, B2B tech clients.
Okay.
I mentioned, you know, that I was at a large corporation before I did this. It was in the real estate or property ecosystem, data and analytics. And I was one of the leaders of innovation there. So I met with a lot of startups to understand, you know, what's going on in the marketplace and how could they be impacting our business and so on. And so because of that, I have, you know, deep relationships with insurtech and prop tech and in that space of real estate and insurance technology. So a lot of my clients come from there. Although, you know, I have clients that are in tangential businesses where they're a tech-based company or an AI-based company. And so I've got experience there. And sometimes I had someone tap me there. I was like, look, I don't really have experience, but I've worked in a lot of different industries over my career. I'm sure I can learn yours. And, you know, as long as you know that with me coming in, you know, I want to be upfront and honest. And, you know, they became a client.
Yeah. So in the let's use the insurance industry as an example. So you're helping them to market the software that they're producing for the real estate client, the customer, right? That using it in their business.
So it's not necessarily, in this case, it's an API. One of my clients,
they have
a web-based platform and an API. And so it embeds into their clients, which are the property and casualty insurers. It embeds into their business. But you know, for, other than that, yes, you're exactly correct that, you know, I'm helping market to the PNC insurers, or I'm helping market to the banks in some cases. And then with this new client, we're marketing to agencies and CPG companies. So that's a new space for me.
Yeah, because it's they're subscribing to the software, right? They're using the technology. I mean, are you really their sales team, or are you supplementing their sales team with the marketing? Because it can be different. Sometimes it's the same.
No, I wouldn't say I'm supplementing the sales team, because my clients typically have, you know, a sales team or a salesperson in some cases.
Right.
But my role is to, you know, and it varies depending on the needs of the client, but it's, you know, I often say I make a, you know, $5 million company look like a $50 million company. It's about getting these startups to kind of act like they're the bigger company that they want to be and get them set up for success. So that's where at Series A, they typically don't have consistent messaging. They're targeting a lot of different clients. And I'm like, let's focus on one client. Let's get the messaging. Let's up-level your brand. Let's make sure that things are consistent across channels. So it's getting a lot of those fundamentals right, so that then we can say, okay, we're going to now start doing campaigns, drive leads, do all the things, you know, get more traction to your business. And so that we get that revenue where it needs to be, we get you the Series B, and then, you know, I work with you, or you go on your way and get a full-time CMO at that point.
But you're dealing with the messaging, the branding, the color coordination. I mean, giving it a look and feel across different platforms, I guess, right? Social media, website, because it's just a mess when you come in.
Not all of them are a mess, but some of them can be. And that's something that I really enjoy. I mean, even though they're B2B tech post Series A
companies, that's the creative side of it, right?
They're not necessarily all exactly the same. So it is a good mix of problems that I'm solving. And so that also speaks to the depth and breadth of my collective as well, because it's not like it's just I'm tapping in on a product marketer all the time. I have a woman that I work with in brand. I have a couple people in brand, but I have a couple of graphic designers. I have copywriters. So I've got a good mix, so that depending on what the concern is, I at least have one person that I can tap into to help.
Okay. So this may be a tough question, but the small business owner, right? So my listenership and even the world in which I work are mostly entrepreneurs, and they're not all looking to raise money necessarily. They're looking to, but a lot of them, this is my opinion, so I don't mean to insult anybody listening, but a lot of them, I don't think really get it when it comes, first of all, forget about a marketing budget, but they don't really have a lot of consistency in what they're doing, right? They have a couple of social media accounts set up. They have a website. I don't know if they're really consistent with their branding, their marketing, their messaging. What kind of advice do you have for people out there who are, maybe they're not startups, but they're small business owners, you know, with trying to make heads or tails out of all this, which has become craziness because of the pandemic and Zoom, with their marketing?
Yeah. So a couple of thoughts there. You know, one, I mentioned that I would call myself a client-centric marketer. And I would say the best thing you could do, and it's, if you're not already doing it, is to schedule some time with clients and say, hey, look, I just want to, you know, pick your brain about, like, why do you work with us? What are you doing? Like, what led you to it? Like, where, how did you find out about us? And you might think that you know these things, but then chances are when you sit down and you have these conversations, and whether you do them, which I think is great, or if you hire someone outside to do it, which sometimes can be helpful because the client might feel more comfortable sharing,
right.
I guarantee you're going to learn something. You're going to get insights that will be helpful to your business.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
And whether it is that it teaches you that what you thought they liked about you is not necessarily what you've been thinking it had been. Like if it's like, we love you guys because you're so honest and transparent. And we know that whatever we come to you with, you're going to give us a straight answer. And you're like, they love us because of our technology. The fact that
right.
we save
them
money.
Even care. Right.
It's like, yeah, it's great.
That's
and obviously
great,
we don't,
but we like, right.
But this is really why we refer people to you. This is why we stick around. And, you know, things like that, where you think one thing and then you hear another. So that would be one thing is listen, go out, listen to your clients.
Right, really understand the people that you're doing business with.
Yeah. And it's an exercise called Voice of Client or VOC. And it's something I do with all of my clients. And it's integral to how I develop my marketing plans or the strategy sure. that I develop for them.
Right.
The other thing I would say is, if whether you have children or whether you have access in some way, shape, or form to, or like you're, or even a grandparent or something, ask them to describe what you do or what you offer, and whether it's in tech or a service or otherwise. And I think if, you know, it's a humbling exercise because,
yeah,
you know,
I've
joke
done
that
this
my family is like, what do you do? You know, in
right.
any role I've had.
No, you think they understand what you do and they have no clue.
Yeah. And
if your
and
messaging
so then,
is off. Yeah.
I think exactly. And it's the keep it simple, stupid kind of mentality of like, you don't need to overcomplicate it. And oftentimes if it's that complicated, people are going to tune you out. So it's like, how do you tell the story to a 10-year-old? Because I'm not trying to diminish the intelligence of executives or people out there making decisions, but like we have so many things coming at us in a day. Don't
so
make
much.
Me work hard to
right.
figure out what you do. Like
yeah.
make it easy.
No,
because
you're just going to pass.
Exactly.
You're just going to go, well, I'm not sure what Amanda does. I'm going to go on to the next thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've asked people that before too. We're always updating our website and stuff because I'm like, well, this says X. Do you understand what that is? And this isn't my kids. This is like another professional. They're like, I really don't know what that means. I know you're a lawyer, but I don't know. So we're always kind of tweaking it. I think a lot of people, they overlook two things. One is what their clients think you do, right? And why they do it. And I guess that also ties into like the concept of the ideal client profile. Like what is your ideal client? Not necessarily, I mean, by choice too, like who do you want to work with? And then why do these people work with you? And I think a lot of business owners, that's when the marketing is just like ad hoc, right? You're just shooting from the hip because you have no idea why you're saying anything. Like your message could be totally off and you have no clue. You're just guessing.
Exactly. And It doesn't seem like a big deal, but when you're on the receiving end, it gets confusing. And whether it's visually confusing, because you're like, is this the same brand? And in fact, one of my clients, when I first heard about them, or I know the chief strategy officer, and he had said, hey, go take a look at our website. He's like, we're trying to close our Series A. We might be good for you to come in and help us. So he told me the name of the company and I went, I'm like, I don't think this is the website. I'm like, I must
you
have
didn't
the
think
wrong
it was
one.
His website? Like he sent you the
right.
wrong site?
Yeah. Cause he just gave me the name of the company and I Googled
right,
it.
You
and
Googled
so
it.
Then he had followed
was
up
it?
And I, turns out it was the right one, but I went to it 3 times. And so I'm like, all right. And this particular client has an amazing executive team. The CEO is very receptive. And so in one of our first calls, I was like, I got to be honest, your website sucks. I'm like, I didn't know that it was your company. And I knew the person who worked there. Like, if I don't get it, like what other people aren't getting it?
Right.
And so like, and I gave him some examples and, you know, there was a little bit of UI UX that was complicated, but anyway, it's, you don't want people to not get it. You don't want people to think they have the wrong company. You want people to be able to pronounce your company's name. Like these are some things that yeah, right. seem obvious, but sometimes don't happen. And And, you know, I appreciate that, especially with startups, their heads are down and they're just running. They're sprinting through a marathon. And so of course things are going to get missed. And so it's not a knock on them, but it's like, hey, you brought me in to help you fix these things. So
well,
if I'm not being honest and identifying them, you know, that's
then not, you're not worth
then
anything.
I should be here. Right.
Yeah. But that's a pretty big, I mean, look, I'm not saying that it's easy. It's not easy to admit. It is that you, like you said, they have 14,000 things going on. Who knows what they're dealing with? That's done. Oh, good. But that's a big issue. I mean, if you, who's coming to work with them, it can't find that. I mean, not can't find, goes to their website and think, oh, I don't think this is them. Then, yeah, that's a big.
Well, we did change it. So like,
I would hope.
Problem.
Right.
Problem
it's much
solved.
Better now.
And, you know, the going back to understanding your ideal client profile or your target customer, at that point, and it was good input that they're like, look, we were trying to target investors and raise money up until this
general,
point.
Just in general.
Right.
Anybody.
So it wasn't like me, you know, or the average person needed to understand it. We just needed the investor to understand it. And so that's what we are focused on. And it's like, okay, well, at this point, we're focused on acquiring new customers. So we got to change it so it speaks to the customers we're acquiring. And you know, it's, even though that conversation seems obvious and like a CEO should be open to it, not often are people open to changing something that they've already built. You know, it's whether it's the mentality of like, this is my baby.
Right.
Or,
they're emotionally,
you know, they're emotionally attached.
Yeah.
So it's always, I always appreciate when I have a client that's like, you know, yeah, maybe this isn't what I want to hear, but appreciate you being honest. And yeah, let's go fix it. Cause that makes my job easier too.
Well, that's also the ones that are successful. I mean, you can't get it right all the time. As a matter of fact, you probably get it wrong 80% of the time. That's why you rely on good teams of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that particular client, you know, did a good job in fundraising. So, you know, that speaks to their success as well.
Maybe it speaks to the fix you did on all the marketing stuff.
I'm sure they'd love it. I'll take all the credit.
Yeah.
That.
No, you don't take all the credit. Just like 80% of it. That's fine. Yeah. Okay. So we got knowing your client, understanding your customer, which is definitely a big miss for people. They think, because they think they do. So they're like, oh, we understand our customer, and they're totally wrong. I would say 80% of 90% of the time they're wrong in some respect, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the next piece of advice? You
it
got that down. Now what do you do?
Well, in this one might go before all of that, but it's figure out who is, you mentioned your ideal customer profile. I talk about your target audience. And especially in startups, and I think this applies to a lot of small businesses where you're looking to bring in customers and you say yes to anyone, but then you have this like really wide swath of customers. Who is your target? And then you've got to, if you wanted to market to that group, you'd have to spend a ton of money in a ton of different areas because every group
you're all over the place, right?
Exactly. And so that's the other thing I talk about with clients is I say, okay, we need to focus. We need to prioritize. We can always move into other markets, other industries, other customer segments. But for now, we're going to focus and we're going to go hard and fast after X segment. And then once we're there, we'll start to expand. And so before you go into the VOC and whatnot, figure out who that target is that you want to go after.
Right.
And then I would talk to the lookalike customers who look like that and begin to understand them. Because once you build out that story and then you set out your campaigns and you execute and you measure and then you're like, okay, this is working or not, and you have some success, then you can go back and repeat that process with the other targets and the other segments. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, my business has grown a lot, but you kind of got to like go hard and fast after one, learn your lessons and then repeat it and or replicate it and go out to the other markets.
Yeah, I think that's a huge mistake that a lot of small business startups do that make, because they think that by limiting their message or picking a lane or whatever, that they're somehow giving up business. But I think it's the opposite. If you're all over the place, you never gain traction, you never gain focus, nobody, your message isn't consistent, and you're not really growing. And the ones that get focused, like, look, I'm a lawyer. I do certain things that I don't do. Does that mean that I turn away people that are referred to me because it's whatever that I can do, but I don't do it full time? Yeah, I don't turn them away, but I don't want my marketing message to be out there trying to convince people that I do everything when, you know, it's just not healthy way to run your business.
Yeah, it's the FOMO of business, right? The fear
right,
of missing
that's
out.
The, and, that's the word I was trying to think of. Yeah.
Yeah. And but yeah. You know, I might push back on you to say, why say yes? Like, if you don't want more customers that look like that, there is power in no. And, you know, I am by no means a coach. I do have a coach and we talk about these things too. Like,
yeah.
You know, putting no into the universe so you get something better back.
Yeah.
But like, I think that the, you know, going back to this first startup I worked at, I was in sales and I worked with orthodontists and we were talking about patient referrals. And they said, we only ask our best patients for referrals because like refers like. And so if you've got a compliant patient that pays their bills and does a great job, you know, keeps right. their teeth clean, you want more patients like that, not the ones that don't do what you say and then they complain that their treatment's right. taking longer. And so, you know, going back to the power of no, if you say yes to clients that aren't necessarily what you want to build your business, then they're going to maybe refer more people that are the wrong clients and,
right.
and you could get down a path and it's like, what is your business?
And not only that, you say no to those people who referred from somebody else who you have a relationship with. Maybe they're not your perfect client, but you have a relationship with them. There's a ripple effect and now you're stuck.
Right.
Not being able to say no because you don't want you're worried about the ramifications of that getting out there. That's a huge one. If you build a clientele, like you take anybody walks in the door, let's say I'll use residential closings in New Jersey. Attorneys still do them in New Jersey. I don't like doing them. I'll do them as a favor for a friend. There's no money in it. But I know guys that's all they do. And they're stuck because that's all they get referred. Nobody thinks of them for anything else. And that's not where they want to. I want to shift. I'm going to do another kind of law. Well, good luck. I mean, you get like,
right.
it's so
turning
it's
turning the Titanic at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's so I am still a young company and I don't want to have to say no to clients, but you know, in fact, I have an example of a client where I didn't say no, they were pre-Series A and I don't work with pre-Series A clients for certain reasons. And I took them on because I was like, oh, you know, I have the bandwidth right now. And it wasn't a good fit. And so now when I talk to pre-Series A, I'm like, I'd love to be able to help you. Give me a call when you've got your Series A funding and we can pick up this conversation. And as much as I don't want to turn away the business, right. it's not the right business for me.
Right.
And it's not the best for them. Like they don't need me. They don't need what I offer then. So I think of it as I'm helping them, even though I'm saying no, because they're going to go figure out what they need to do to get to Series A. And then they can bring me in and then I can really make an impact for their business.
Yeah, I think that's the short, you know, the short sightedness of it's human nature, right? You're getting started. You're still in the startup phase, really, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're all in. I feel like I'm always in the startup phase, and
right.
and you don't want to say no to anybody. You're like, well, I need the money. I want the clients. I want to build a successful company. And it's this voice in your head that's saying, Amanda, you can't turn away. We don't have any customers. You gotta. You know, or we have three and you go, but then now you bring on this person and you've kind of filled a slot, so to speak. Right. And then you don't have room for the next person. So next week you meet the right person, the perfect person. You're like, oh shit, I shouldn't have taken that other person on because now I got the right customer.
Well,
and I think people got to give themselves more of a chance.
And, you know, we talk about case studies in marketing and, you know, you probably have some version of that as well for your business. And so this particular client, if they're not the right fit, if they can't give you a case study that you can then use to find the next client, well, then it's like, why did you do it? Like how, like, yes, you get a paycheck, but it's not really gonna, like you said, long-term help your business. So not that we need to, you know, beat this dead horse of saying no, but I do really think it's hard to do. And, you know, it's been hard for me. And so I appreciate that.
But
when
there are tactful ways to do it.
Oh, of course.
And still seem like you're helping. I'd say no to people on the podcast. You know, I don't think this is perfect for you. We don't have the right listenership. Let me refer you to somebody who I think can find the right fit for you, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's how your person, I forget who it was, but found me. And then she's like, you got to talk to Amanda. She's great. You know? So, yeah. Okay. So we got two very important things. Maybe the most important, your message, knowing your customer and knowing when to say no. Right.
I think that
Amanda's secrets of life.
Right. The power of no is definitely a good
power
life.
Of no. I love that. That's got to be the title of your book.
When I get around to writing it, and I will attribute credit. And I don't know if your legal services can help with that kind of thing.
A little bit. Yeah. I do those kind of contracts publishing. Actually, I have some good ghostwriters too. They would probably be like, they'll get a lot of it done for you. You just got to kind of meet with them once a week. Yeah. I'm working on a book right now. It's called, it's called 10 ways to get sued by anyone and everyone. And it's about, running your business so you don't get sued. And my friend Barry, I've probably said this on podcasts too many times, but my friend Barry's helping me write it. If it would be blank if I wasn't doing this with him. So we're like adding things in, and I'm basically setting up interviews on Zoom, and then I'm transcribing it and I'm giving it to him because I don't want to write this stuff.
You might have given me the fourth point that I would say, which to me, that speaks of high emotional intelligence. You know where your strengths lie. You know who you are. And I think that that's when you're in a leadership role, whether owning your own business or leading an organization, a function within an organization, having EQ is so important because, and this might go back to, another recommendation, which is you don't always, and you probably don't want to be hiring people that look like you, that think the same way. There is power in diversity of thought, in diversity of experience. And even as simple as just someone being able to say, when I read this sentence, like the cat ran, or whatever sentence it is, this is what I picture in my mind. And it's like, I picture an orange cat on a street. And it's like, I picture a black cat running through the grass. And it's like, we both heard the same sentence in different things. And I think that there's power in that diversity of thought and making sure you're bringing people into your organization, whether it's contractually or, full-time hires that can help bring a different perspective.
Yeah. So knowing your strengths versus your, not weaknesses, but your limitations, stick in your lane, stick with what you know. Don't try and be a jack of all trades. Sometimes we have to, right? You just start. It's just you.
Right.
But I tell people when they write business plans, one of the four pillars of a business plan is personnel. And if that personnel is just you, you should evaluate whether you're the person who brings all those skills to your business. And if you don't, and be honest with yourself, right? Go out and call Amanda and say, listen, can you be my marketing person? I've raised, raised X amount of dollars, whatever. You might say, well, you haven't gotten past Series A yet, but call this person and can you do it? And, maybe it's too expensive to get these people. Maybe you don't have the right expertise, but figure that out early on because you're going to fail.
Yeah. And I think it's great to do a lot of the things on your own in a way, especially as an entrepreneur, to learn, okay, what are the things that I'm avoiding? Why am I avoiding those?
Right.
Those are probably the things I'm not good at or I don't like that I'm likely going to need to outsource in some way, whether it's a full-time hire or otherwise. And then, but if you know how to do it in some way, and you've already done it.
You got to know how your business operates, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah. But the EQ, and in fact, I did a TikTok, speaking of different channels.
Trying to figure that out too.
And I was talking a little bit about EQ and how I think, and in fact, there's often a transition point at Series A funding where a founder might be replaced by an outside CEO and how it takes an incredible amount of EQ to, recognize that need. And sometimes the investors recognize it and the person
doesn't. Sometimes they do.
Right. But, there often are shifts because it is, the game has changed at that point.
It's a different skill set. There's no question about it. Yeah. So business people are using TikTok. I see my kids in the living room dancing and doing, I'm like, come here, dad. I'm like, don't get me on TikTok. Like, I'm not going to do this crazy video with you. And you put some funny face on me. So
well, you did a cat face you already mentioned. So I don't like it.
Somebody showed me Facebook, you can do, cause I have an Android, right? So I can't use FaceTime. So Facebook Messenger, you can do video and then there's all kinds of filters on there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So TikTok,
going back to knowing your audience, I wouldn't say that TikTok is where my clients' audiences are. I would argue it's not where my audience is either. As a marketer who wants to learn and grow, like I think part of my job is also to try these things out, And to if I was a chef, like trying different cuisines or going to different restaurants, right?
Right.
It may not be what I serve, but
you need
still
to
know
this for your customers too.
Exactly.
Your clients, yeah.
Yeah. And as I'm building and developing my brand and understanding what platforms work for me, I thought, hey, I'll give TikTok a try. And in some ways that led me to begin to start doing podcasts because I was like, oh, this is other than just a picture or like on LinkedIn where, you know, you've got a post and written words, being able to discuss and have a conversation and engage, I enjoy that. Yeah. And so even though TikTok, it was often a one-way engagement.
Those are quick too, right? They're shorter.
Yeah. I still got to have a say, a voice out there rather than just words in an image. And so it's not the best fit for my business. And I would say that, you know, depending, going back to know your audience, if you are a B2B company and your audience is on TikTok, then you should be there. But if your audience isn't there, then it's probably not the best use of your time and marketing dollars to be spending a lot of time on a channel that no one's going to be paying attention to.
Right, right, right. Well, I think it gets back to what you said before. I just lost my train of thought, but when it comes down to these different platforms, you said before about somebody who recognizes that, you know, things are always going to change and they're okay with that. Like they don't just put it out there and why isn't this working anymore? Well, mm-hmm. You posted that 8 years ago and that's why, you know, it's not working anymore. But I think that, yeah, I think that if you want to dabble in different, not dabble, but you know, you can't just stay static, right? You can't just say, right. Oh, LinkedIn is the place for me to be. Meanwhile, other things are going on. You got to learn those things. But I find that, I guess audio and video are more compelling now than just the written word? I mean, they kind of have to be overlapping in terms of like, you can't just post articles anymore, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and
or is it depends on the industry, right?
Yeah, it really depends. I mean, you at any given moment might prefer reading something versus watching a video. So let's say I'm, my husband's fallen asleep and I'm in bed looking at my phone. I'm not going to put on a video. I might read a blog, but like during my day, I might have, 30 seconds to watch a quick video versus taking time to like read a long blog. So
right.
I think that each individual is different at different times. And one might say that each industry is different. So videos might resonate more with one than another. But to me, the real thing is taking any piece of content and finding lots of ways to use that piece of
right.
content. So
right.
if you've got a blog, well, turn it into a script for a video, turn it into some posts, turn it into an infographic.
Audio clips,
or,
right.
You got it. And so
headliner.
it's yeah. if you're investing in the content, you know, juice it, right? Like get the most out of it that you can.
Right. Well, but part of that gets back to what you said, right? Knowing your customer, knowing where your customers are and where they're going. Like just because they're here doesn't mean they're going to stay there. So if you keep marketing to them on Facebook and then you realize everybody went over to TikTok, mm-hmm. you're not right. really getting to the people you want to get to.
Yeah, exactly. And thinking like Clubhouse, which in, it's my understanding.
Clubhouse is all audio, right?
Yeah. And I think it started in January. So not that long ago. And I was on it and, there are people who have like 55,000 followers or like hundreds of
yeah,
thousands.
Yeah, I know.
Followers
it's crazy. Right. Yeah.
Right. In a very short period of time. But like what you get on Clubhouse is very different than what you get on TikTok. But then there are people, personalities, companies, whatever, that have transitioned from one to the other. And so it'll be fascinating to see where that goes and how it's utilized. But there's always something new coming, and it's maybe a bad phrase, but it's like, I don't ever want to be the old dog who's never learned new tricks. So
right.
it's kind of like, you gotta stay in touch and know what's going on. And it may be right for you. It may not be, but like, I'd rather know how I feel about it or understand why it isn't. So I can go to a client and say, this is good for these reasons, or this isn't good for these reasons, and be able to offer that, insight to the people who I'm working with.
Yeah, well, the digital world, moves very fast. And I think with the pandemic and everybody being forced online and onto Zoom and connecting that way, it's sped up tenfold, in terms of what's going on. Mm-hmm. Look, I don't know how I would utilize it, but I do know a divorce attorney, a family law attorney, who is using TikTok. Her son knows how to do, I don't know, whatever. And she's putting these short things out and she's getting business from it. She's getting calls and contacts and connections. And she's putting things about to know if you're getting divorced or before you get married or guardianship issues. I don't know, whatever she's putting out there, and she's engaging, connecting, whatever the term is,
Yeah, both. And in fact, I had a surgeon come across my feed, and he's quite witty. And I was watching him like, these are brilliant, like the way that
he's got a good personality.
Right. And he's been very clever in how he's used some of the trends that were on TikTok and whatnot and apply them to his business. So, you know, and this goes back to the art part of marketing, right? Where, hey, sometimes you can build a niche or build a market where you wouldn't expect it to be, right?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes taking a risk there's a high reward for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're just standing out. I mean, that's the hardest part, right? Isn't it? Standing out in the crowd. You had mentioned before, we are bombarded with information minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day. It passes us like, like you're at a buffet, you know, one of those where you go to the cafeteria and the food's going on the tray. And if you don't take that one, something else comes. And that's kind of the way life works now, even faster. So you have to be like, that's why I always tell people, like, even with the podcast, you got to be consistent with, if you're a solo person, you got to put stuff out on a regular basis. You can't just post something and say, oh, that didn't work, because nobody probably heard it.
Right. And I mean, that's where also you can use the same piece of content other times, because
they didn't probably see it the first six times.
So. Right. Right. And I mean, this gets into that territory too of authenticity and what your brand stands for. And so if you're not, your brand isn't one that's going to always be on top of the trend or what have you, then, like, you know, also don't worry about it. Like I always say, play your game, right? It's easy to have your head on a swivel and get that FOMO, like, oh, well, this person did this and that person did this. And it's like, if that's not right for your business, if it's not right for your brand, if it's not going to reach your customers, then just, like, be okay, kind of like sticking to your plan. And yeah, we all need to be nimble and flexible and recognize where the tides have turned or there's industry shifts, but to some extent, you know, being consistent is half the battle in a world where things are changing so fast. If you're, you know, continually being like, I am, you know, client centric, or I'm, you know, there's a lot of transparency, or all of my innovation is focused on business results, and you hit that point time and time again, eventually it will resonate.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people, I mean, I was just talking to somebody the other day, and we're putting together an article and some stuff. And then I said, listen, I'm not going to invest in this unless I get 25 different pieces out of it. Like, it's going to go on a blog and it'll be published here. And but I think that's one of the problems, is that people they just try to do too much. You know, they're like, well, if you do the podcast, you know, you can transcribe that and then put that here and you can make blog. Do you know how long it takes to transcribe an hour podcast? I mean, I don't have a staff, right? So I'm not paying somebody to clean up our transcription, but it's wrong. I mean, so you have to go through line by line.
Can I offer a solution here? Because I am no way, shape, or form associated with this business, but the company is AmberScript, and it is very affordable transcription.
How accurate is it? That's the issue.
Extremely accurate. Okay. And yes, you still will need to go through and clean up, because if you're umming and awing, you don't want all that, but like cleaning up.
But the words themselves are pretty accurate.
Yeah, very.
Okay.
And so when I mentioned I do these AmberScript voice of client calls, and oftentimes, you know, I'll record them and then I'll want to go back and reference, or I've someone on my collective is working on it with me. If I'm doing a one-on-one call, I want to be able to share. And sometimes people prefer to read versus hear a conversation. And so I use their transcription services all the time, or even for voice notes for me, if I'm ideating about something. So yeah, I would put that as a best practice for my business.
All right, I will definitely check that out.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get them as sponsors of the show. But I know that if I take your transcript and I put it in the show notes, it's now searchable by the search engines. They can't search our audio. Not yet, right? They can't search your video, I don't think, right?
Well, AmberScript.com for the answer. Maybe I should ask them for a promotion fee, but they're great. They're great. Yeah, no. So shout out to them.
I'll definitely check them out. All right. So I have taken up a lot of your time this morning. What do you want to leave with, some thoughts about advice for? You're already giving very good advice. It's probably one of the best conversations I've had about marketing and stuff. But any closing thoughts? We'll put your, you know, links in the show notes so people can get in touch with you. What's the best way for people to reach you? I mean, what's the website? Archcollective.com?
Arch-collective. Collective.com. Yes. And if you're a freelance marketer, creative, go to the collective page and there's an application that you can submit.
Okay.
And I'm always open to meeting new marketers and creatives with a variety of backgrounds. So if you're interested, don't hesitate to reach out. And if you're a company that's about to be closing on your Series A and thinking about bringing in marketing help, or you've just closed your Series A, go to the clients page. And then there's a form where you can get in touch with me, and then I'll follow up and we can set up an intro call for 15 minutes where I can learn a bit more about you and, you know, see if it's the right fit. And then we go from there.
Perfect. So what's the weather like out in Michigan today?
It is nice. Actually, well, right now it's sunny and it's supposed to be 60. It snowed a little bit on Wednesday. So the schizophrenia of Michigan weather in the spring is real, but it's supposed to be beautiful. So I'm looking forward to,
you know, it was nice really weekend. Cold yesterday. I think that all came from you guys.
It probably did. You're welcome. Sent that you're
some people
your
got
flowers,
hail.
Right?
It's like April. Yeah, it's crazy. But I Amanda, I can't thank you enough for spending time with me and for
thank
us
you
getting
for
in touch.
Me. This is
and
great.
Yeah, let's definitely stay in touch. And I'd love to watch your business grow and see how you affect people.
Yeah, well, I look forward to your help in publishing the book that
right,
now
your
I need
memoir.
To go write.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Amanda.
Awesome. Thank you. Have a good one.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.